Welcome to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Knowing that ultimately it's God who does the healing, Dr. Medici acts as the maestro, orchestrating a person's health through right timing and right therapies, using traditional, natural, alternative, and spiritual practices. Dr. Medici says it's time for people to wake up to their innate potential to heal and to be given a doctor who can orchestrate that healing. Dr. Medici is currently working toward his PhD in biochemistry at Long Beach University, with additional study in acupuncture, kinesiology, and quantum medicine. He's the curriculum director of the Santa Monica Shiatsu School. And now, here's Dr. Medici.
Good morning. Happy Saturday to you. True December weather. Cold, cloudy, us spoiled people of Los Angeles and Southern California. But you got to admit, when it's cloudy every day, it affects some of us. Today's show, strokes, how to prevent the first one and the one that follows. Important topic. Stroke is the third to fifth leading cause, depending on what you read. Third to the fifth leading cause of death in the United States each year. I don't think we do a good job with strokes. Reason? Most people don't die of stroke the first time. They die the second or third time. And what happens between the first time and the second or third time is all often like next to nothing, meaning you get the first one, and as some of you may know, then you're prescribed Coumadin, some sort of blood thinner, to such an extent that you bleed into your hands. You ever see sometimes some of the older people, the forearm will have these big purple blotches. Very often those people are on Coumadin, which some say is rat poison, really a derivative of warfarin, or Plavix, or any of these blood thinners that people are given when they have these strokes. Well, we'll say when they have the ischemic strokes, the embolic strokes, the clot strokes. But then they have another stroke anyway. That's why stroke is the third or fifth leading cause of death in the United States, because the therapy doesn't work. It may work on paper, it doesn't really work in reality. And I think most people that are prone to strokes or have a stroke and don't want to have a second stroke, they're not given the full perspective, thus the show today. So I think we can get a lot to you over the next 60 minutes. Let's go. If you're new to the show, I'm Dr. Vincent Medici. Get on the website, if you can, straighttalk.cc, not .com. That's with two T's, straighttalk.cc. Lots of great pictures here that make it easier for you to understand this somewhat more comprehensive, some say complicated show on radio. I'm looking for you to get used to the fact that to really get the return on holistic medicine, on holistic health, you got to dig a little deeper, which means you got to get a little more educated than simply tuning in and asking your healthcare provider, what supplement do I take for my problem? That's okay, but I think you got to go deeper. So let's go deeper. Again, get on the website if you can, straighttalk.cc. For those of you driving, I will certainly take the time as best I can to describe what I'm talking about as you drive, etc. Okay, first of all, two types of strokes, ischemic and hemorrhagic. We're not going to deal with hemorrhagic today. In the worst scenario, your blood pressure goes up to 280 over 160 and you burst a blood vessel. That's a hemorrhagic stroke, when the artery to the brain bursts. That's kind of like an aneurysm, except an aneurysm is already a bubbled out artery. The aneurysm is already like a big balloon about to burst, and then it does burst, and often you can see an aneurysm long before it bursts. But a hemorrhagic stroke, well, on a relatively normal artery, feeding the brain, again, strokes refer to blood flow to the brain. If you have a burst artery to your foot, we don't call it a stroke. You have a hemorrhagic incident, but it's to your foot, and that's bad enough. But if it's to your brain, that's the stroke. This is a hemorrhagic stroke. We're not talking about hemorrhagic strokes today. And the hemorrhagic stroke is the minority of strokes. Most of your strokes are called ischemic. I like to call them embolic. I like that word. That word is in the literature, commonly used. Ischemic means embolic, a clot. You developed a clot. Now, that clot can develop anywhere in your body. It can start in your heart. But for you to have an embolic stroke, oh, Mr. Smith down the street, he was a little older. He was in his 80s. He passed last week. He had a blood clot to the brain. That's an embolic stroke. Most of your strokes are embolic. And that gives us lots and lots and lots of things to do about it. No one should have an embolic stroke. I'm exaggerating. But we could reduce the incidence of embolic strokes so many times. We really, really, really could. This is the cardiovascular department. Whether it's the heart or the stroke, these are things, if the American public acted and they got the information, especially after the first stroke, you got to understand the focus here. Yes, we all push our limits. We work too much. We worry too much. We eat too much. We do all these things that are wrong. We're enslaved to the desk and we can't find an hour and a half a day to work out, to exercise. This is the American syndrome right now. Okay, fine. But if you've had a stroke, you've already got a serious wake-up call. And you don't want to have a second stroke. There are so many things you can do to prevent that that you're not being told. So when we talk about an embolic stroke, a clot stroke, the issue basically comes down to how not to form a second clot. Now, you are given Coumadin and Plavix, and they're coming up with some new ones now. And you're being told, well, that's what you do, and don't worry about it. If that were true, stroke would not be the fifth leading cause of death in the United States. I want you to think about that. If you're out there and you've had a stroke, you're being told that, well, you're being managed. You're doing what you're supposed to do so you don't have another one. And yet, strokes are the fifth leading cause of death in the United States. That tells you something. What it tells you is those drugs don't work. They help, but they don't work completely. They help, but they don't protect you from the stroke. Which tells us, now you got to think about this. You got to get the game here. Which tells us when pharmaceutical medicine doesn't have a solution, when allopathic medicine doesn't have a solution, you don't hear about the flaws in the way your case is being managed. And in a way, that's understandable. In a way, that is understandable. Because the way a doctor will look at it is, let's do for you what the standard of care implies. You had a stroke, an embolic stroke. You're going to get the drugs that the standard of care says you're supposed to get with some basic counsel on lifestyle, a little nutrition, and that's what a good doctor does. And it's understandable that they stick to that. But what do you do when there's so many other things to understand? And of course there are, because if they had it covered, stroke wouldn't be the fifth leading cause of death. The vast majority of people don't die from the first stroke. They die at the end chain of a series of strokes. So, not even overstated, even though I repeated myself, strokes are not managed well. When you've had the first one, you are not being well managed along the lines. Now, let's get more technical. The platelet. The platelet is part of what composes the blood. And when platelets clump together through a very long-winded, complicated clotting mechanism, you get a clot. And here's to the clot. Cheers to the clot. You cut your finger, you better clot. The clotting mechanism is a critical mechanism. That is a life-giving, life-sustaining, life-saving mechanism. But when you're prone to embolic strokes, and you've already had one, say, or you want to prevent one, well, we've got to do something about the clotting mechanism, because, of course, the concept is if you're going to have another embolic stroke, another stroke from a blood clot, it makes good sense to give you something to break up the platelets, to make sure that the platelets that are part of the clotting mechanism don't clump together to give you that stroke. That makes sense. Good. So we give it to you. It's not so much a problem with that. The problem is there are many other reasons why you get a clotted stroke. Clots form for reasons aside from platelets. The clotting mechanism of the platelet is only part of why you clot. And that other part of why you clot, those other parts of why you clot are not addressed. This is so big. If you can follow me. Can you follow me on this? I don't think this is so complicated. Again, strokes are not well managed because most people die from the second, third, and fourth stroke. They're already on the blood thinner. So if we had the management of stroke down, if we really knew how to prevent them or even reduce them, why would they be so high on the list? Well, obviously we don't. And it's not to say that interfering with the clotting mechanism by deactivating the clotting mechanism by platelet adhesion, which is Coumadin, Plavix, etc., it's not to say that that's bad. I'm not saying go off those drugs at all. What I'm saying is that there are other mechanisms, there are other things, issues that create that clot. If you got that, you're following. Good. It's big. Why? The word is, and some of you have heard it before, blood viscosity. The thickness of the blood, blood viscosity. If you're on the website, straighttalk.cc, turn to picture number 10. There it is, Meridian Valley Lab. They may not even be around anymore. I think they are. Point is, they were part of a consortium of medical doctors trying to put together some of the more high-end assessment protocols for people that would be headed towards heart attacks, clot strokes, ischemic strokes, etc. And so they started pumping around, running around the complete blood viscosity test. Yeah, the thickness of your blood. Now, Chinese medicine, Ayurvedic medicine, other medicines are always interested in the thickness of the blood. The thickness of the blood or the viscosity of the blood is an issue responsible for your health. Thickness of blood controls many things. You have low back pain, you have arthritis, you have any health concern. The thickness or viscosity of your blood is as important to your health as, well, how you know pH is important to your health, or oxygenation of the tissues is important to your health, or having a good inner spiritual life is important to your health. Up there with all of those things I just mentioned is viscosity of the blood. So this company, in a very common sense way, is pointing out that if you're going to really manage your cardiovascular concerns, you're going to get a good sense of what the thickness of your blood is. Now, this wasn't new, and that was my point a moment ago. Other medicines have been on this for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and thousands of years. And so when we talk about stroke, the stroke you don't want to get, but this stroke you may have had and you don't want the second or third one, the transient ischemic attack, that's a mini stroke that you have and then you get over it and you don't want the big one. You're really talking about blood viscosity. So this company, this lab, this team of doctors started pumping this complete blood viscosity test. And if you're looking at that picture on picture 11, in the ad it says, is your heart pumping sludge? The thicker and thicker and thicker and thicker your blood gets, the more and more and more and more likely you are to have a stroke. Done deal. End of conversation. that kind of changes it. Because embolic strokes, well, strokes are the fifth leading cause of death in the United States. The majority of those are blood clots. So the next question is, what's the thickness of your blood? What controls blood viscosity? You're not just hearing it from me. This is everywhere in the literature. Hematology's in on this. But when you have a stroke, you don't see a hematologist. You see a cardiologist. A cardiologist is the mechanic. A hematologist is the guy that has enough spare time to study other things. And one thing hematologists understand is the variables controlling blood viscosity or blood thickness. By the way, now here's the link. Here's where we jump out of the frying pan. As I said, blood viscosity is one of the driving concerns of holistic medicine, whether holistic medicine understands it or not, or says it or not. And of holistic medicine, Chinese medicine and Ayurvedic medicine are two root cultures. America didn't invent holistic medicine. America is a neophyte. America is really, for the most part, a pawn in its understanding of holistic medicine. There are cultures that have had thousands of years head start to what we understand in America today, and they all base one of their very focal concerns regarding health on blood viscosity. Okay. What controls the viscosity of your blood? Here's one thing. And how many of you were told to focus on this, at least at the hospital? It's called hydration. That's how vast and how variable this topic is. Let's just say your arteries are filled with enough water, beyond enough. Let's just say the plasma of the blood. And so what's blood? Blood is, because we're talking about clotting now, and we're talking about tendencies towards clots. Blood is all the solid stuff in the blood, red blood cells, white blood cells, a little bit of normal. There's a little bit of fibrin normally in the blood. There's platelets in the blood. The blood's got solid components. And then the rest of the blood is water, plasma. 90, 95% of your blood is plasma. Very little of your blood has anything to do with red blood cells or white blood cells. Now, we've got trillions and trillions and trillions and gazillion trillions of red blood cells, not too many white blood cells, and relatively speaking, not too many platelets. But the point is, suppose you pumped your artery filled with water. Suppose you filled your artery with all the water it was supposed to have. Now there you are, John Q. Public. Doesn't that just make sense that you're going to dilute the viscosity of the blood with water? Of course it does. How many people are running around dehydrated? Lots. How many people are drinking their 2 to 3 quarts of water a day? Few. Think about that. And how many people are drinking and eating all sorts of things that thicken the blood? We'll get into that in a moment. But when we talk about blood viscosity, and about blood viscosity as it relates to developing clots or not, you have to understand you can do so much. And that was my point a few minutes ago when we started the show. In fact, you can do so much just drinking the amount of water you're supposed to drink per day becomes a big, big, big deal. If you looked at the number of people having strokes each day in the United States, and you added to that the number of people having their second and third stroke to death, I guarantee you, you would find people living in severe states of dehydration. And you know that. You just have to reach out and talk to your friends. How many people are actually drinking 2 to 3 quarts of water a day? Now, that's just the openers on this. I'm Dr. Vincent Medici. This is Straight Talk on Health. We're talking about strokes, how to prevent them, and how definitely to prevent getting the second or third one, stroke being the fifth leading cause of death in the United States. blood viscosity. What controls blood viscosity? Now, here's the concept. Here's a concept. The concept is that any free radical, so now we've got to talk free radicals. If you're on the website, straighttalk.cc, a free radical is simply an atom that loses an electron from its valence shell. The outermost shell of an atom pops off an electron, and then that atom runs around hungry to satisfy the electron that it lost. We don't need to get technical. Just know that when you hear the word free radical, you're talking about an atom, basic component part of the chemistry of your body. And it loses an electron in its outermost shell. It becomes electron deficient. And on that basis, it goes on a mad quest. It goes on a frenzy to find something that it can pull that electron back into its ring. That's a free radical. Free radicals do damage. They do damage because they're electron deficient and they want that electron back. So we say that if you smoke cigarettes, you're blowing a lot of free radicals into your body. We say that if you're exposed to ionizing radiation, EMF, cell phones, you're working in offices where the radiation is up through the roof and no one told you. We say when you're exposed to air pollution. We say when your insulin is high from high blood sugar. We say anything really, in a sense, that's bad for you, negative thoughts, will produce hordes of free radicals. Electron deficient compounds looking to find the electron they lost. That's really important. Because the amount of you that's a free radical you, the amount of you that lives in a free radical state begins, triggers an inflammatory process. The free radical comes up to your arterial wall. The free radical comes up to the inside of your artery and pulls a piece of that artery off. It's like a paint chipper. It comes up to the paint on your brand new car with a hammer and a chisel and chisels off some paint. And so you got all these woodpecker type free radicals chipping the paint off the inside of your artery. When the immune system sees that, it blows a whistle and you start laying down a ton of fibrin. So let's catch this. What we call clots is basically a response from the immune system to free radical damage on the inside of the arterial wall, forcing the deposition of fibrin. Now, what is fibrin? Fibrin looks like in Spider-Man, when Toby McGill, is that his name? In Spider-Man, when he flicks out his finger there and all that spider, that sticky spider web. You ever try to clean a spider web and the web is so sticky that it's all over you, and then the spider's crawling up its own web onto your hand because, unknown to you, that web was so sticky it stuck to you. That's how sticky fibrin is. And fibrin's got a good reason to be sticky. Fibrin, in the evolutionary sense, is what the immune system lays down when it wants to sequester a free radical. You get bit by a bee, you get a bee sting, or you get bit by a snake, or some poison enters your body. The immune system sees it and starts laying down this spider web of fibrin. And that spider web of fibrin creates what? A sectionalization, a compartmentalization, a sequestration of that area. And that's good because that contains the poison or the bee sting. So the clotting deposition of fibrin is a health-giving issue, evolutionary. But if you're under chronic inflammatory stress, if you're always blowing the whistle in the immune system, for all those reasons, from eating wrong and spiking your insulin to worrying to doing too much exercise to living in really polluted areas to being around too much radiation, airline pilots. Oh, my God. Stewardesses and airline pilots. The risk of stroke, or the fact that the radiation from the jets is going to push, it's going to push their blood towards a clotted, heavy fibrin deposition state is enormous. And as this process goes on, the body lays down more and more of that sticky, gluey fibrin. Your blood becomes sludge from fibrin deposition. Blood stasis from dehydration. Blood stasis from fibrin deposition for all the reasons I just suggested. Any free radical pro-inflammatory situation brought around by the wrong lifestyle is going to put you in a different profile. So what we're saying now is when you come in to a cardiologist's office and you're concerned about your cardiac / stroke profile, even more importantly, you've already had a stroke and you don't want the next stroke. It's not just about, are you taking your Coumadin? Are you being careful about your Plavix? Are we measuring the prothrombin time? Are we measuring the INR? And if we are, and we're sure we're giving you the right amount of Coumadin or Plavix because of the prothrombin time measurements, well, thank you. You're done. Now go home. That is not what it's about. You need a profile. You need to understand it's not just about your platelets. Have you hydrated? Do you drink that 2 to 3 quarts of water a day? Number one. Number two. Have you minimized your inflammatory profile? So now we're making links here. John Q. Smith, the link between whether he's going to get a second stroke and his inflammatory profile. Inflammatory profile meaning how much fibrin is he laying down because he's challenging his immune system with all these pro-inflammatory agents. So what does that mean then? Where's your blood sugar at? Are you running your blood sugar high? Yeah, your glycosylated hemoglobin is borderline high. It's not bad. It's just almost past the normal limit, but not quite, so we're okay. And your morning fasting blood sugars, well, it's 100, which isn't bad. And you see, this is my point. When you break down the inflammatory profile, you got to do it correctly. Because if you're off by 10 or 15% with everything you're trying to figure, everything you calculate into your inflammatory profile, if you don't do it right, then collectively you are in danger. And this is how people have these second and third instances. And all along they're told you're taking your Plavix, you're taking your Coumadin, you're doing what you're supposed to do, and let's just hope for the best. It doesn't work too well. And I'm not saying don't take your blood thinners. I'm simply saying you're not getting the full picture. I'm Dr. Vincent Medici. If you're new to the show, here to give you the full picture on important topics. Get to the website if you can, straighttalk.cc, not .com. That's .cc, 2 C's, straight talk, that's 2 T's. So, blood sugar. Keep that blood sugar all day long, under 100. Check out the paleo diet. If not the paleo diet, do what you want. That's another show. Check the site for all the shows I've done on diets and how to choose your diet. Whatever diet you choose, if it's the McDougal, eat corn all day diet, or if it's the paleo diet, eat the meat, whatever it is. You have to make sure of this, and no one can argue this, that your blood sugar, you are living with blood sugar under 100 all the time. Because if half the day your blood sugar's up at 150, rest assured your insulin's up at a rate that's way too high. And if you're running too much insulin throughout the day, you're blowing that immune system whistle that will force a ton of fibrin deposition. High insulin, high blood sugar is a free radical. Now, what does that free radical do? It eats the inside of your artery. Your artery is a bunch of layers, and on the inner layer, the inner epithelial layer of the artery, it is very prone to being hacked up. Free radicals love to eat up the inside of your artery. On top of which, if you're running high blood sugar or you're running too much free radical stress in the blood, it's going to attack the fat. So I want you to get this now. You're concerned with a stroke and not having a second stroke. That means a blood clot. That blood clot is the end result of a cascade of integers or variables. To form a blood clot, you've got to lay down a ton of fibrin. The immune system lays the fibrin down in response to triggers. One triggers high blood sugar. The other triggers high insulin. They both are free radicals. Those free radicals will eat up the inside of your artery. That's a problem for you. You're on your way to a clot. The other thing that high insulin, high blood sugar will do, it'll start to oxidize or create stickiness in the fat in your blood. This is the thing about the fats. If they're not attacked by free radicals, the fats are safe. If the free radical damage in the blood is too high for reasons I'm citing, and there are more reasons I'll cite, then the fats start to get sticky. And if you add a sticky fat to a sticky arterial wall, you're going to start to create a plaque, a fatty plaque. And a fatty plaque is blockage. And that blockage will start to add to the blockage of the clot. Because what's a clot? A clot is blood that gets so thick that eventually, as it stagnates in an arterial wall, because there's plaque there, you have this mound of fatty, blood clotty sludge. Stagnant blood plus fat hanging on an arterial wall, creating what ultimately will be mass occlusion. So we're talking about blood viscosity, because blood viscosity helps create stagnance, and stagnance then congeals all the blood. Plavix and Coumadin don't stop that process, but keeping your blood sugar down does. But hydrating your blood does. And you got to know how to do those things. Now, let's talk about vasoconstriction. Let's talk about the diameter of the artery. You can just figure this out. It's just common sense. The diameter of the artery has a lot to do with how fast the clot blocks the blood flow. If the artery's wide, you can have a bigger clot, and yet blood gets through. But suppose the diameter of the artery shrinks down by 50%. Suppose the diameter of the artery is variable. I mean variable in you. I mean day one, it's this wide. And then day two, or moment two, or hour two, it's 50% vasoconstricted. Those of you who listen to the show regularly, what do you think controls the diameter of the artery on a second-to-second basis? That's right. You got it. The autonomic nervous system. Stress constricts arteries. You see this with heart attacks all the time. The stroke is just a heart attack in the brain. When you go into a vasoconstrictive episode from stress, if you are tending towards sympathetic dominance because of stress, if you aren't sleeping for whatever reason, you're up urinating all night, or you're eating too late, or you've got emotional stuff, and you're not sleeping, and you don't sleep, And since you don't sleep, you don't make your adrenaline, and you live with too much stress, I just gave you two more reasons why you're very likely to go into a sudden vasospasm. That's really big. Think of that. Think of that. Think of people who have had strokes. Think of people who are being managed for strokes. And think of your trip to the cardiologist. Are you taking your Plavix? Are you managing your diabetes? Are you taking your blood pressure meds? Well, yes. Then let's just hope for the best. That is not what you want. You want better than that. Now, if you're having trouble understanding this show today because, well, you're not into science, you got to get on the website. You got to reach a little more. You got to step it up a little. Because there's no magic supplement to make sure you don't ever get another stroke. There's some good nutrition out there that helps in these mechanisms, but you've got to get the education so you get the totality, so you can start to get your own health profile. You do your own cardiac profile, and you encourage your healthcare providers to do the same for you. Some of them, I won't say all of them, but some of them are aware of these things I'm talking about, but they're not telling you. So you got to take the first step. You got to take it to your doctors, your cardiologists. Mr. Cardiologist, is there something more I can do? Well, no, just take the Plavix. What about hydration? What about keeping my insulin low? What about the fact that I'm up twice a night to pee, not making my adrenaline? And when I'm not making my adrenaline, I'm more likely to go into a vasoconstrictive event. What about the fact that I've been a worrier my whole life? What about the fact that my cholesterol is too high? What about the fact that my oxidized cholesterol is too high? You've got to add that. But we don't even test oxidized cholesterol. In other words, when you go to your cardiologist and you're trying to get insight into, are you creating too much sticky fat? That sticky fat in response to free radical damage, the production of those free radicals in response to all these things I've mentioned. That oxidized cholesterol test, LabQuest does it. Lots of medical doctors work with LabQuest, but no one measures oxidized cholesterol. Life extension, you can do it yourself. Go online, order the test, oxidized cholesterol. Oxidized cholesterol tells you what percentage of the total cholesterol is the sticky cholesterol. That is really important for you to know. If your oxidized cholesterol levels are going up and up and up over years, you are more and more and more at risk. Add that to poor sleep. Add that to lots of stress. Add that to the wrong fats. Add that to dehydration. And when you put that all together and you've had one stroke, guess where you're going? So ask yourself, in the 40 minutes I've been on, are you getting value in terms of understanding your cardiac profile, your stroke profile? And this is why I'm doing the show today, because I don't think people are being told. I think to manage strokes merely with Plavix and Coumadin and a few other things, that is not the ticket. And things are changing, but most people are not getting this information. All right, let's keep going. Fascinating subject. I'm going to pull you to the website. I'm going to pull you to the website. Look at picture 13. All those red blood cells, picture 13, clumped up versus picture 14. All those red blood cells separated. If you do microscopy, you can see clumped cells. Hematology understands this. Somebody comes in, they draw a little blood, look at the blood under a microscope. This is done all the time. If a person's living dehydrated, if a person's living with very high insulin, if a person's worrying a lot, if a person's exposed to too much radiation. Oh, these tests have been done hundreds of times. You take somebody's blood out in the forest, and then you put somebody up in a jet for 6 hours, and you take a picture of their blood. You want to see clumped blood? Blood clumps when the body is exposed to high levels of radiation. And many of us are working all day in high levels of radiation. See any of my shows on high radiation. Do your own Google searches on high radiation. And understand that one of the things that drives strokes, and I, you know, the stewardesses and the airline pilots, dangerous jobs, dangerous, dangerous jobs. You couldn't pay me enough to do a job like that. No way. That job is dangerous. I take my chances on the front, the Russian front. Those jobs are dangerous. You know, what are we doing? You live near places like Long Beach that have many times the cancer in the rest of Southern California, and then maybe you're a stewardess or an airline pilot. Oh, man. Lots of people live in radiation. Radiation, dehydration, stress, high insulin, high blood sugar, lack of sleep, so exhausted adrenals. This is what clumps blood. And hematology can see this. It's not like this is a mystery. You can even measure fibrinogen levels. One measurement on lab tests that no cardiologist does is fibrinogen. Yes, you have to look at fibrinogen just as you have to look at oxidized cholesterol. There are lab tests that can start to tell you whether you're pushing into that category of danger. So ask them, can you measure my fibrinogen? And they will say, well, why? And you'll say, because I used to smoke, there's stroke in my family, and I don't ever want a stroke. And then you'll probably have to arm wrestle to get the test. And I'm not exaggerating. And this is the point. People are generally intimidated by doctors who won't order the blood tests, because right now the standard of care, especially with this new healthcare system. You know, I was talking to a guy in England yesterday, a good friend of mine in England, comes from a family with real money, can get the best health care in England. England is socialized. Trying to get things done in the English system, even when you have money. Now, I'm getting it play by play. And I've heard this out of Canada, too. Play by play is a nightmare. When you want good, aggressive, think outside of the box therapy, forget it. It doesn't exist. Yeah, you can have your isolated incidents of I don't have any money and I need an operation, and somewhere along the way you're going to get it. But if you're proactive about your health and you want the best of healthcare, good luck in a socialized system. I just had to throw that one in. I talk to everybody all week on. I have at least 10 conversations a week with different forms of medical doctors for my clients, to see how we can think outside the box and give people better health care. So I'm always talking to somebody. I just had to mention that. I mean, it just came in this week, and it's not the first time. It's the 10th time. People that have resources and means. I mean, they have money. In a socialized system, when they compare it to what we used to have here in the United States and hopefully what we're going to get back again, no comparison. Just had to say that. All right, I'm Dr. Vincent Medici. We're talking about strokes, how to prevent them, how to make sure you definitely don't get the next one. Elasticity of the artery. That is a big deal. Now, we're not talking about clots anymore. We're not talking about things that control clot formation. We're talking about elasticity of the artery. Because if the arteries become hard, if the arteries lose elasticity, it's much more likely for the blood to clot. An artery's kind of like a snake. It's blowing out, it's blowing in, it's blowing out, it's blowing in, and it's wiggling along. The artery, if you turn to picture number 9, actually, you know what? I think I got a better picture for you than picture number 9. If you would be kind enough to go to picture number, go to picture number 8. Go to picture number 8 and look at the comparison between an artery and a vein. Both arteries and veins are layers of connective tissue. It's not a pipe, a solid pipe, or a solid straw. It's layers of connective tissue. You can dissect out those layers. You're going to need a microscope, but you can dissect the different layers. The elastic layer. Well, they're all elastic. But the muscular wall of the artery is called the tunica media. Arteries have a very thick layer called the tunica media. The muscular wall of the artery is what propels things. You can stretch an artery out and let it collapse. You can expand it and collapse it, expand it and collapse it, expand it and collapse it. As you expand an artery and collapse it, you push the red blood cells along. The expansion of the artery and the collapse of the artery is its elasticity. It is its elasticity. And because of that, the expansion and the collapse of the artery make sure you don't increase the blood stasis. Blood stasis develops when you lose the elasticity of the artery. That's why people who smoke are so at risk. When you smoke, you damage the elasticity of the artery. That's one thing. The second thing is the essential fatty acids. The healthy fats, the healthy fats, and the healthy fats. Clean, pure docosahexaenoic acid, the DHA. Astaxanthin, the stuff cleanly derived from the algae. Premier Research Labs has both those products as pristinely delivered as is humanly possible. My vote is get it out of nature, but we do have an issue. I'll take it out of wild salmon. But if you can't, wild salmon, a good wild salmon, $30, $40, $50 a pound. If you can't get it out of food, if you can't get great flax, make your own flax oil. At least you've got some good products. But that's not my point. My point is making sure you're digesting your fats, making sure you're getting copious amounts of the healthy fats, the DHAs, and the astaxanthins, so on and so forth. Super important because it enhances elasticity of the artery. Of course, you got to have a gallbladder that works, or you don't send those fats where they're supposed to go. Are you sleeping? Are you digesting your fats? Are you getting the right fats in? Are you sympathetic dominant and thus prone to vasoconstriction? Are you getting your sleep, or are you adrenaline deprived? Because you're not. Are you dehydrated? Are you running your blood sugar? Are your insulin too high? All of this is your stroke profile. All of this put together over time determines whether or not you really minimize risk or not. Now, a big one in the game here, structure. It's not just nutrition that controls your propensity to clots. It's not just making sure you minimize your exposure to radiation, to EMF. Are you working around computers all day long? Going home to computers all night long? Computers all day to work? Computers all night for entertainment? Your hands on a keyboard all day and all night? You work in an environment where the radiation levels are high. Check any of the shows that I do, and you'll see I always put a picture of a Gauss meter, an F.W. Bell 4180 Gauss meter, to be purchased for $300 so you can at least take a big jump in measuring your radiation exposure each day. Why? Because it will clot blood just like dehydration will clot blood. Now, something in another area, just as big, just as important as your nutrition, just as important, single-handedly just as important as anything I've mentioned today, is your cranial rhythm. Do you have an intact cranial rhythm? This isn't a little thing. This is a big thing. If you're new to the show, you might not know what I'm talking about. Those of you who have listened regularly, you understand what a cranial rhythm is. But it's always good to hear it again. A cranial rhythm. A cranial rhythm implies that the bones of your skull, so if you can turn to picture number 28, turn to picture number 27, and look at the bones of your skull. There are many bones of the skull. There's dozens of bones. And they all come apart. If you look at picture 29, that's a great picture of the bones of the skull coming apart. Take a moment and look at picture 29 if you can. Picture 29 is a great rendition of reality. All the bones of your skull separate. At the turn of the century, there was a debate in anatomy between the Italian and the English anatomists. The English anatomists understandably said the bones of the skull, the joints, that the bones of the skull do not move. The sutures of the skull are immobile. They don't move. And there was an argument between the English and the Italians. And the Italian anatomist said the bones of the skull do move. The sutures flex. And this is a big deal because its implications are enormous. The implications of what we know today, that all these bones that you're looking at in these pictures, that the sutures, the joints between them flex, means that your bones are constantly pumping your brain. Motion in the sutures of the bones of the skull massages the brain. Motion in the sutures of the bones of the skull massages the brain, which means pushes the blood. The major way you counterbalance blood stasis in the brain is by having the sutures flex. And that's what we call the cranial rhythm. This is why head trauma is so dangerous. Because it shuts down the cranial rhythm. Most people have never even heard of a cranial rhythm. No cardiologist is assessing you for your cranial rhythm. No cardiologist is putting together. No one's putting together that your stroke profile is related to the fact that you're losing your teeth, and that you're losing your teeth means when you bite, you don't send force vectors through the maxilla into the ethmoid, into the sphenoid, and that your bite controls the cranial rhythm. Your bite has a vast influence, thus your teeth, just thus a symmetrical bite. And people who clench, when you clench at night, you shut your cranial rhythm. People who clench have terrible cranial rhythms. Meaning, and it's just common sense. This is the thing. You can take on de facto, you can take and trust that the bones of the skull flex. The bones of the skull move. Move enough to massage the brain, and that moves the blood, which is what you want if you're concerned about mitigating your next stroke. And then you can understand, it's only common sense, that if you have your teeth and a symmetrical bite, that as your teeth touch your teeth symmetrically, you massage your bones. The bite massages the bones. And if you're clenching all night, that's the end of that. When you clench all night, and don't say you have the plate in there. Yeah, the dentist made you the night guard. That's good so you don't grind. But even with that night guard in there, you still clench. You got to look into the NTI. Ask your dentist to make you an NTI. Or get involved in manipulative therapy. When you've had tread trauma, when you clench, when those bones don't flex, the brain doesn't get massaged. You can put that as equal as anything I've said over the last 55 minutes. We could do 3 shows on this. And that gives you a sense of how to really reduce the incidence of stroke. I'm Dr. Vincent Medici. 714-850-1007. 714-850-1007. If you're lost in the labyrinth of help and feeling over your head and need counsel, need to be set in the right direction, need to be given a health program, need to be given understanding, call my office, 714-850-1007. Today's show, strokes, how to prevent the first one and the one that may follow. God bless you. We'll see you next week.
You've been listening to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Invite your family and friends to the show and learn about Dr. Medici through his website, straighttalk.cc. He'll give you the tools you need to save your health and prevent unnecessary surgeries and harmful drugs. He's dedicated to your ultimate healing. Join Dr. Medici next week at 10 a.m. for more Straight Talk on Health. This show and the information therein has not been evaluated by the FDA, and recommended products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. The information provided on this site is for informational purposes only and is not intended as a substitute for advice from your physician or other healthcare professional.